Blog Talk Radio.
Checking your smile, working your back like it's going out of style. Shake just a little bit faster, shake just a little now, girl. I'm dying to meet you, so let's mess around. Got an obsession with us getting down. Come just a little bit closer, I just need permission, so
with us, and welcome in Ronnie B. Hey Ronnie, how are you?
Oh, good evening, everyone. How are you? Every wonderful Sunday afternoon.
It is a wonderful Sunday afternoon, and I'm so glad that winter is almost over and we didn't really have a winter. Oh, isn't that awesome?
It's awesome. I wonder if we're going to have a mild spring as well. That would be so fantastic. This has been the best winter ever.
Ever. I hope we have many, many more. Just like this. One snowfall and that's it. I thought I lived in Georgia or something. I'm like, did I relocate?
Yeah. I didn't even, we had like 5 minutes of snow.
We had 5 minutes of snow. One real bad one. And it was like in October or something, right? It was so
in
early
October.
In the year.
Yeah.
And then we had a sniffle of snow like last week or 2 weeks ago that just like,
it was like
two
teaspoons of snow.
That's right. We had 2 teaspoons of snow. So I'm happy about it. And then every day, though, I go outside, I don't know what to put on. I'm like, okay, should I put on a heavy coat or should I layer up or what am I supposed to do? So I leave my heavy stuff on because I don't know what from day to day.
You never know. You just
never
know.
And in the morning.
Even though it's morning, it's really nice, but in the afternoon it changes and it gets a little chilly. So, but it's still not, you know, blood-curdling cold like we have most years.
Right, right. And February would be blood curdling, right? February would be blood curdling. And we're at the end. We're at the end of February, so we're almost like into March.
Spring,
March is sometimes. Sometimes it gets. Well, I know in Ohio anyway. We used to have some horrible, horrible winter, horrible month, snow month in March.
We've had a lot of snow in March. Sometimes we have mild winters, and then in March we get like 8 feet of snow. So
okay. So
hopefully that won't go.
We're not going to do that this March, though. We're going to sail right through it.
Yeah.
Yay.
It's wonderful.
Yay. Yay. So Miss Cassandra just came in. Hey, Cassandra. How are you?
Good. How
are
you doing?
I'm doing great. We are.
Exactly.
Yes, thank you. We are here broadcasting live at D&K Hair Gallery in Valley Stream at 203 West Merrick Road. So if you're out there and you're listening, come on in and hang out with us. So, Ronnie, listen, did you watch? I just have to give all condolences and love and prayers and well wishes and everything to the family of none other than the phenomenal Whitney Houston. So should we start with talking about Whitney, or should we end with talking about Whitney, or is there a beginning and an end when you're talking about Whitney?
I don't know.
I know.
You know, I've always been on Team Whitney.
You have. You have always been on Team Whitney. Always.
Always.
From day one. From day one.
From
that very first album cover with her hair pulled back, that gold cover. I don't remember the name, right? I don't even remember the
Whitney.
Title of that album.
Wasn't it called Whitney?
That's right. That's right. But she's, man, I don't even know what to say about Whitney Houston. Do you guys know what to say about Whitney Houston?
I don't see Whitney. I've been doing Whitney. I never did a funeral before in my life. 4 hours.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But Pastor Flake was talking about it today in church, and he said that he and half of the choir sat in his office yesterday and they watched the entire funeral. Yeah. And then they watched the CNN program afterwards, and then somebody else did another program after that. And they watched the whole day. They spent watching the Whitney Houston celebration, and Bodyguard was on last night. Did you watch it, Ronnie?
No, I didn't watch Bodyguard, and I almost watched the funeral because I was brokenhearted, and I just couldn't take it. The pain was too much for me because I don't know if you recall, a couple of months ago, I did that report about her on Sunday night.
You sure did.
And I said she was going to make it back because she had the movie and all that. And so this was the movie and the Waiting to Exhale. Was it Waiting to Exhale? They were going to do the
part two. That's right.
Getting Happy. And so I just knew that this was her time to recover and shine. And this was just a blow from I don't know where. So
yeah.
I just said I don't know what to say. I was just too much, and so I watched some of it. Like I told you this morning, I faked it.
A little bit on YouTube, a little bit on the radio,
and a little bit, and then I had Coco watch it and tell me what was going on. What are they doing now?
You had somebody, you appointed somebody to watch it and report back to you.
Yes. Well, okay, who was that? That's Tyler Perry. What is he saying? Why don't you watch it?
I can't watch it.
Just tell me what he says. So,
yeah,
but,
Tyler Perry
yeah.
is something else, though. Tyler Perry is unbelievable. All that he's done for the family, you know, just in this moment.
Yeah.
Everybody's reporting how much he's done. Always. Everybody always mentions Tyler Perry and what he's done. It's like he always does the right thing.
Were any of the ladies there? Did they watch it?
Did you watch it?
Everybody,
you did?
Yes, we tuned in and everybody was crying.
I know.
Did you hear Tyler Perry?
I watched part of it. Tyler Perry was very, very, very good.
I didn't hear him.
He was so powerful. You know, he was just overwhelming, so powerful and so determined, you know. So it sounds like he will always be there for their family. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Kai, you were saying you watched it.
Yeah, I watched it, and then I sort of rewatched a little bit of it later on with my mom, who was 83 years old.
Wow.
And, you know, I told her when I left the house when she started watching it, I said, don't watch the whole thing. You're going to get, you know, so sad. And when I got home, she was sad. But I explained to her, you know, I said, it's not an occasion really to be sad. It's to really celebrate all that she did while she was alive, and also to sort of take that situation and look at, say, this woman had everything.
Yeah.
But yet could not just get sort of that monkey off her back to, you know, to go on. And so it always tells us that we really need to pay more attention to what is going on, because the signs were there. You know, we see them here and there, and the signs were there. And so I told my mother, I said, you know, take it as sort of a lesson learned, celebrate all that she has given, and hope that other people will look at that and say, you know what, that's my role model. She went through stuff, so can I.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And when I'm going through stuff, instead of these people gathering at my funeral, these are the people who need to be there every day to help me get to the next level, to, you know, get this monkey off my back.
Yeah.
You know, because they were saying, you know, every 7 to 10 minutes, her security guards had to come in to make sure she wasn't in the bathtub or different things. And so where do we get to at a point when our life gets like that and everybody doesn't surround us and say, you know, we need to have a very serious, serious intervention.
An intervention,
here.
Right.
It shouldn't be a bodyguard. It should be, you know, family right there.
Right.
We need to do something now. We just have to say, you stop doing everything you do and sit down right now. We need to look at that. So often the signs are there, but we sort of ignore them and hope they'll go away or wish they'll, you know, go away. And some of them have to look at it as celebrations in our life, and all those that come learn a lesson, because God puts us exactly where we need to be at any given time to say, what can we do so not one more will go out this way?
How wise. God, that's so wise.
That's what you'll be hearing in my workshops. Okay.
Wasn't that great, Ronnie? Wasn't that some tremendous wisdom?
Yes, it was wonderful. Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So wise. Well, you know what? Today I was thinking about her. Well, I've been thinking about her every day, but I was thinking about Whitney today, and I don't do this. I don't think, or at least I don't do it to the point where I actually spend time pondering it. But today was the first time I actually pondered my own funeral after thinking about Whitney Houston. Because after all, she was 48 years old. You know, she had been through a lot. She had problems, but you figure, okay, we just, like, you know, Ryan was saying, we just knew she was going to overcome. I knew this was going to be a Natalie Cole story. I knew I was going to be dancing and singing to more Whitney Houston songs and going to more movies that I love her acting. But today I actually thought about, you know, what would people say at my funeral?
you know, and I thought about the people, all the folks that I love so much, and would they know how much I cared about them? And would they be able to speak the way the people spoke at Whitney's funeral? So I just, you know, I felt like I wanted to make a real shift and a real change and make sure that I was, you know, giving the love that I want to give to everybody and making sure that they know just how much.
That's,
you know,
awesome.
Ronnie, I want you to know how much I love you, you know, and appreciate you.
Oh, thank you. That's wonderful.
And I'm so happy that you're in my life and all of you here, too, really, because you all are my friends. You are the people that I work with and engage with, and Sharon and everybody. You know, it's so important for us to be able to do that. Because even, you know, definitely when you're having problems and you have the intervention, but also even when you're not, you know, and
yeah.
You just have people in your life that you want them to understand how important that they are to you. So God forbid, you know, not like I'm trying to leave here tomorrow or anything, but I just want, you know, I want people to know how much I care about them. And also it made me think about, even though, you know, my problem is not a drug addiction or whatever her other, you know, I don't know what her problems were in these last days of her life. But even though that's not it, though, I do have problems that I need to, and things I need to change. And it brought to me the urgency of making those adjustments in my life while I have time. Because,
and
you know,
I think that's my takeaway.
Yeah.
That we don't know what the next day or hour is going to bring. You know,
that's
like
right.
They said, they saw her in the lobby an hour or so before this incident. And so each day, if you, like, say, on certain days I decide that I just, oh, something is just too hard for me to do. I don't, you know, I'm just throwing this out here. Not that I wake up saying, oh, this is so hard for me to do. I might be waking up, just like you said, pondering, oh, today I'm really going to get past this, whatever this situation is. And I thought, you know what? It's not that hard. We're still awake. We're still alive. We're still breathing.
That's right. That's right.
We
and
have that
God.
Next moment to do it. Thank God. Praise God. So
yeah.
Do it, you know?
Yep. So this
exactly.
Will be the last time you all hear me talking about weight. I'm just saying.
Okay.
This will be the last time you all hear me talking about weight, and I don't know how I'm going to get it off. I know how to get it off. I know how to get it off. I know what I need to do, and that's there. You know?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. You know, just, and it's like some of it seems simple, and it may not be, it may be difficult, it may be challenging, it may be whatever, but certainly, you know, I thank God for every morning that I open my eyes and I have the opportunity to go and take care of whatever that is, you know, and not let it linger. Because just like you said, that intervention, people coming together for the intervention is to make sure that a change happens. You know,
exactly.
Not to keep talking about it year after year after year after year after year and not making a
exactly.
change.
Exactly,
so,
not making
yeah.
a change. And, you know, I was thinking, I was like, goodness gracious. Every day of your life, you know, we have a moment to thank God for that last moment, the next breath. And I definitely want to be at peace when I pass away. I don't want to be in turmoil,
right.
And I don't want to be head down in the tub. My hair ain't going to be right. I can't.
Right. That's right. You have people finding you, and they're upset, and, you know, just.
No.
And we still don't know. Did she, I still don't know, because I had stopped watching it. I don't know whether or not she fell asleep. They don't know yet.
They won't say. Somebody knows. They just don't want to say, and I can't blame them. You know?
Well, hold on.
You know,
because I want to hear what Kai says. Go ahead, Ronnie, finish.
No, I said they know what happened. The person that came into the hotel area and found her or left her in there, whatever the case might be, they know exactly what happened, but they don't want to say, I guess, so that maybe some dignity for the family, as well as maybe insurance situations or the police investigation is still going on.
Oh, okay. And Kai, what were you going to say?
Yeah, the medical examiners are saying they're doing drug toxicologies, which are going to take weeks to come back. But that's just going to tell how many drugs she had in her system.
Right.
You know, but that's not going to say whether he killed her or not. She could have fell asleep. She could have, you know, they said before she had, you know, they've shown she was drinking champagne and, you know, mixing medication with it. So there's so many different things. So we're never going to know the truth. Mm-hmm. What we do know is she is gone.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's sad that she's gone, but again, we need to just sort of move on from that and learn a lesson with it. I think at my sister's funeral, who died of breast cancer a couple of years ago, the minister made a really poignant statement. And he said, you know, it's not when you're born, it's not when you die. He said, it's the color of your dash in between. What you do in the middle of your life, that's why all the people show up, you know, later on. That's why the people, but my sister's funeral, we were clapping and laughing, and because it was all about the good times and the good things, you know what I mean, and the things that she sort of stamped on earth before she left. And now everybody else's funeral is like, okay, it's our time now to finish living out her dream.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? To continue celebrating her and celebrating her life. So it's sad with Whitney, but we have to learn a lesson.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We have to learn a lesson. Otherwise, it will be somebody else again. We went Michael Jackson. We were, you know, surprised. But we all saw it. Whitney, a lot, we all saw it, too. We wished, you know, when we wanted her to get over that hump, but when you really see pictures and stuff of her, you know, she was bone thin, very frail, all of the sweating, you know, the erratic behavior, all that type of stuff. And they sort of just started to accept that that's the way she is. But that's not the way, that's not normal, you know, for anybody. People are like, okay, she's doing good. But she really, you know, did we just want her to do good?
Yeah. And everybody else.
Yeah.
Do you want to share anything? No. Sharon, any thoughts? Come over here and share your short, your thoughts. Miss Netstruck Network.
I was listening to the radio, another radio TV show this morning on Channel 7, and they were filming it. And they were showing the live feed from where the burial was going to be, or the last service was going to be. And they had some young girls coming out, and they were interviewing them. These girls had been maybe like 17, 18 years old. And they said, well, I grew up listening to my parents, listening to Whitney.
Oh, wow.
And so I'm just like, wow, either I'm really old, because I remember growing up listening to Whitney, not listening to my parents listening to Whitney. So I'm part of the culture of growing up with her and, you know, the Bodyguard, you know, all her movies, her songs and everything, you know, it just brings you back to say, wow, you know, I did not expect.
I really did not expect this
to happen to Whitney when she went into rehab and, you know, she was getting her life together and things like that, listened to all her TV show interviews and things like that. I really thought that she had herself back on track. And, you know, this is something that just, like, shocked me. I mean, a lot of the celebrities, they pass away, and it's like, okay, you know. But this one I did not expect.
Yeah.
This one I really didn't expect.
This was hard to take. And one of the other
this just lets you know how devastating addiction is. Because addiction is so, so cunning, baffling, and unpredictable. And so one person could be one day in rehab and come out of rehab and die the next day just from that one next fall. It's just so such a terrible disease. It really is. It's crippling. And like she said, to me it was a shock because I thought, she had it together. I knew she was lying when she was on Oprah. I knew she was still not sober. But this last time, I thought for sure she was in a better place. I just say that.
Right. That was Cassandra that was saying to me, too. She was just saying,
Tony, I agree with you because drug addiction. Ronnie, I'm sorry. Drug addicts are very manipulative, and she kept saying, like, the key words to Oprah, you know, praise God or whatever. She was talking a lot about God, and I said, nah, I just saw, so I can't say that I saw it at the time, but it was like she was trying to con the audience that she was okay. She was only in rehab for 30 days, and that's not enough.
That's not enough.
You know, and so the people who were around her really needed to gather her and say, okay, you need to go away for a long time.
Mm.
Because the 30 days.
I thought she did, though. I thought she had done a long
time. She said on Oprah 30 days. She said, I did my 30 days. It was like she did her time, and it wasn't like she really did any kind of internal healing. She just said, I did what I had to do.
And I could do drugs that she was using 30 days. She was on hardcore drugs.
When was that 30 days, though? Was that, that was a while ago,
yeah,
wasn't it? Years ago.
She was just in rehab in May, Kathleen.
She was just in rehab for a while this past year, right?
In May.
But do you remember how long she was
May of 2011, but no, nobody ever said how long she was there. And the unfortunate thing about rehab is that you can go for 30 days, you can go for 30 minutes, you can go for 30 months, but you really, if you're addicted and you've been, like she has been, you know, damaging her body and indulging since the 80s, how is 30 days going to help?
Yeah, because it's a lifetime thing you have to now dedicate to, you know,
one day at a time
to relieving yourself of that desire, and also whenever any feelings come up where you would normally have gone to that drug or that drink or whatever to heal it, you have to have something else in place. So it takes a lot of psychiatry, you know, psychology and emotional healing.
She never parted from them either. So she felt, I guess she felt that that's something where she was strong enough that.
Well, I thought that everybody was blaming it on Bobby Brown, though.
No, she was on drugs before Bobby.
She was on drugs before Bobby.
Yes.
Somebody told me that also.
But I think when she met Bobby, she cared about her appearance. She stopped caring about her appearance because at that point she was just out in the open.
Mm.
When before, you didn't know, you could not tell that she was on drugs. You did not know she was on drugs. So,
Kathleen, remember now, we lived out there. We knew she was on drugs then, way before Bobby Brown.
Back in Hollywood. Yeah.
No, but that's what everybody's saying, that she was on before Bobby Brown, but it wasn't as obvious as it was after she got with him. Would you agree with that, Ronnie?
No, because I was obvious. It was obvious. You just had to be in the right places to see it. But it wasn't as blatant because she was probably in the beginning stages. But she was definitely doing it. And then when she got with Bobby Brown, it was like she had the right partner to go full bloom with it. And
yeah.
And
he
was
hardcore.
Yeah.
He, you know, and when they did that TV show, that's when I knew. I was like, whoa! They did not need that show, because when you saw that show, that was the side of Whitney Houston we did not want to see. Whether that existed from the time she was 9 years old or not, we had never seen that before, and they needed to keep that under wraps.
I didn't see it. Everybody keeps telling me about it. I never saw it.
Oh, my gosh.
You can catch them on YouTube now.
Oh, my gosh.
I put the reruns on.
Yeah, that was
I can watch it on YouTube?
Yeah, you can watch it on YouTube.
I'll watch it on YouTube. I've never seen it.
But
Donna Dunn was saying that Whitney, Bobby, and her would sit up. She said, oh, yeah, we get up and get high, you know, all the time or whatever. She said, I got so high that Bobby Brown wanted to manage Chaka Khan's career. And Chaka Khan said, I wasn't that damn high. You know, you get around all these other celebrities, this is what everybody's doing. They're all hanging out, they're all doing it together. You know, yeah, it's free. If you've got money, you're doing all this stuff.
Oh, the drugs are free.
Yeah,
oh, I see.
They tell me that your coach or whoever will give it to you.
Yeah.
Get you hooked up.
You know, you send your bodyguards to go get it and stuff like that. So it's not like she was going to the, you know, regular crack house herself. You know, people go get it for her. You
crack
know, everybody.
Is whack.
Yeah, that's what she said. Crack is whack. Who will not forget that?
That's cheap.
I heard that somebody said that today. I hadn't heard her say that, but that crack was for poor people.
Well, you know, that's unfortunate because the entire Los Angeles was infected with that disease, and anybody out there had crack, cocaine. Everybody would buy it, give it to you, force it on you. The doctors would force it on you, and I mean cocaine, not just those pills. The doctors would say, oh, here, I got the best thing I'm telling you, the biggest surgeons coming out of the best hospital. It was. It's just rampant. It's a lifestyle that you have no idea exists, and so it's just unfortunate. And you have to be strong and be determined and fight it, and stay out of that community. And she should have never been out there in Los Angeles. And that's what Shaka said. Why in the world is she out there in Los Angeles hanging out for a week by herself? And people that are addicted are so cunning and baffling, and you can't – a lot of times you think you can help them and intervene, and they are dangerous. You have to get away from them. They're almost uninhabitable. And that's probably what happened. She got to a point where you couldn't even go near her. And that's usually when they succumb to that disease. I got a lot of inside information on the diseases, so I've watched people, so many people succumb to those diseases. I had a lady friend that was drinking, and I thought she was, you know, fine. Like everybody says, she was fine. And one day I asked her husband, oh, how's she doing? And he said, oh, you didn't know? She died. And I said, what? He said, no, she just drank herself to death and absolutely refused to stop, period.
Yeah.
Young woman, 42 years old, just wouldn't stop until she was dead. It's just cruel.
Yeah, right. Because sometimes they do that and they feel like, okay, we'll use this to kind of transition you or whatever. Yeah.
All the doctors giving all the prescription drugs along with the alcohol, so she went right to something else, so she was still on drugs.
Yeah.
Just something that was prescribed by doctors, and you're mixing them, you know, depending upon how you're feeling. They were showing interest with Clive, and they were saying, you know, when these movies were coming up, she's like, Clive, I'm going to get better. And one of the things I heard was, for you, for this. I'll do this for you. She was never saying, for her, you know, I'm working on my voice, for this. You know, never just saying, you know, I'm doing this for me. I'm doing this. It was for those movies. It was for Clive to convince them that she was okay.
And you know what? I wondered a couple of things. One thing that I've recognized, I think I knew this in my spirit or innately, that she was not just that she was Whitney Houston, but that she was as powerful and dynamic as she was as an individual as she was as an entertainer. So when we see all these pictures of her with Nelson Mandela and presidents and dignitaries and going all over the world and doing the work that she did and everybody who knew her and worked with her and so forth, I was like, this was a powerful woman. I mean, a powerhouse. And then when you think about it that way, you say, well, but wait a minute. When people think about what they imagine a phenomenal life would be like,
mm-hmm.
you know, and when you see all that she was involved in, mm-hmm. you say, okay, so what was it that was hurting her so badly that had her... Yeah, that had her go that route. So that's what I was trying to wonder. I was like, well, what was it? Because it wasn't Bobby Brown. You know, it was there that existed before. And I'm wondering, too, like, well, did the family know or did they not know? Or was it, you know, was it that girlfriend that she had before, Robin? Or, you know, what was it? So, and not like it matters now, but I just wonder if, you know, was everybody in denial about what that was to kind of help her heal that earlier on so it wouldn't have taken this path? And I don't know if that's the truth. But in order, yes.
This is Jerome. How are you? I didn't know my mic was open.
Hey, Jerome. How are you?
how are you guys?
But weren't you calling me?
Yes, I said Kathleen, and I thought, wait a minute. I didn't know if my mic was open because it had to be for probably a while, right? I called in when you first started on Whitney, and I wanted to tell you that I watched the whole thing. So,
you did?
Yes. Okay, we'll do a proper introduction. My fault. I just jumped in and started talking.
Go ahead, Jerome.
Yeah. Okay, what did you just say? I didn't hear you.
No, I said go ahead.
I was saying I watched the whole thing, and, you know, usually, I mean, I won't sit and watch services, and it's really funny because I was talking to my mother on the phone, and I said, you realize I'm not going to the repast, you know, when you sit through a long funeral? It's like I'm tired. And I said, I am hungry, but I'm not going to the repast. But the thing is, I mean, I don't really even know what to say about Whitney or anything, but I can tell you that one of the times that I always say I love black people is usually during memorial services. There
yeah.
is something really pure about the fact that even when your relatives are showing out, that you just say, that is just who we are, right? It is
yeah.
something about that, just, you know. And so just even how everyone handled it, pretty much, except for the Bobby Brown situation, I've seen some, I've seen some online stuff, and this, I don't know, the guy did say his name, he identified himself, and he was in the eighth row, and he was just saying that Bobby was moved quite a few times, he and his kids and some of Whitney's cousins, and it said it wasn't just Bobby and his family, which was wrong, it was actually some of Whitney's other cousins as well, so they kept shuffling those guys around, and
okay.
Bobby was there.
I didn't know he was there. Okay, all right.
Yeah, he left before the service actually started. He was there. He came in, but apparently, you know, he probably didn't come in with the family, so he got there earlier from wherever he came from. I think he did a show the next night in Connecticut, right? And so,
same night.
You know,
okay.
Mm-hmm.
They said the same night.
And he brought his his kids, which was Whitney's stepchildren, and I think, you know. I mean, in anybody's imagination, that was just wrong, right? I don't care what kind of falling out your families have one way or another. You cannot stop who loves whoever just because
yeah.
someone passed away and you're mad at them. They're blood relatives because they have a daughter, and that was those kids' half-sister. She was in pain,
that's right.
So you can't just snatch the one person who's kin to you and take them away from their kin. That was just wrong. So, you know, for everything else, I really have to say that's the only thing that bothered me about the whole thing, although the whole thing bothered me, right, just that she passed. So,
yeah.
And by the way, I know you guys didn't see Being Bobby Brown, and I did watch that show. Remarkably enough, I watched the reality show. And I have to tell you, that was more revealing about Whitney than it was Bobby. It made Bobby seem really normal.
It was. It should have been called Whitney Houston being Whitney, but we don't want to see how you be Whitney.
What's weird about that is that it you know, Bobby is very human and Whitney is very, very human. And from all the blame that Bobby gets in tabloids and all this other stuff, Bobby was just normal, you know. If a fan came up, Bobby was asking to take a picture. Whitney was like, no, we got to go. Like, she was just not having it. So it really showed a different flip side of who his person is. And it's amazing that people still just dislike him. But
yeah,
it's not one way or another about that.
What were you saying?
I wanted to know if anyone can tell me why her father sued her. It was sometimes she stopped talking to her father for something.
Oh, that was years ago, right? I think I remember that.
Yeah. I can't remember what the story was about that, but I'm sure it was a Janet Jackson control issue. You know, like when you're children of entertainers, the parents, sometimes the males in particular just get really protective of the girls, and Whitney kind of was off the rails. You know, at a young age.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, she used to pop in on Arsenio and all of those parties that they would have. Arsenio and Eddie and those guys, that was their girl.
Yeah.
You know, that was way before Bobby Brown.
Hey, Ronnie, I know you have something to say about that. Ronnie?
Ronnie holding out on that one. She took radio silence on us.
Oh, she must. I don't know where she is. Maybe she's talking to somebody or something, but. She had a lot of comments about Arsenio and Eddie, because I think somebody proposed to her. One of them, it was Arsenio.
I want to say it must have been Arsenio more than Eddie, but I know they were all and everyone from Randall Cunningham and all those guys back in the days was chasing her heavy. So
yeah.
she was in the party circuit. So You know, like I said, it's just because of the style of music and how beautiful her voice was that everybody wants to isolate her. And it's weird because I was watching some of the coverage and someone from MSNBC, I can't remember her name, and she was just saying, that can't be true. She was talking to Kelly Price, and she just said, that can't be true because she grew up in a church in a gospel area. Oh, it wasn't Kelly Price, but it was someone else, and they said, Newark is Newark. That was his response to her. Newark is Newark.
That
you're
is
not
true.
Sheltered growing up in Newark.
Exactly.
What did you say, Chanel?
You can take the person out of Newark.
He's trying to beautify her, get her out of it. Yeah. But I didn't understand. I mean, I know that. But when I think of
wrap your head around.
It is hard to wrap your head around, right?
Because she was surrounded.
Yes. And who she's related to. Her and Diane Sawyer?
Yeah.
No.
I think one of the four. She was saying that all of her life she was in church and she wanted something different. She wanted a taste of what was out there.
Oh. So she was like a PK. She was like a preacher's kid, kind of rebelling against. Yeah, that's interesting. Wow. Well, hey, Ronnie, are you back? Ronnie.
I would love Ronnie.
Okay, go ahead, Jerome.
Yeah, I was going to say, and that's a stereotypical preacher's kid too, right? That is,
yeah.
That's what we all know in the black church. A preacher kid is normally the kid you need to watch out for. Well, my cousin, I have a cousin who's passed away who was on drugs bad, a preacher's kid. His father was one of the biggest reverends in the area, and that kid, I mean, he was older than me, but he was off the rails all of his life. I think he spent more time in jail than he did out. And it was, you know, and he was the most giving person one-on-one that you can ever meet. Like, he'd give you the shirt off his back, but then again, all the other stuff that he did would take away from it at the same exact time. But, you know, in my quantum living theory here, I have to tell you that I told him one time, he was in my car, and he gets in my car and says, this is nice, and I said, hey, let me tell you a nice little story. I get up and go to work every day, but I told him this. I realize that you're stronger than the rest of us. You cannot be born under the addiction of anything and not be strong. That's a long way to conquer addiction. So I have respect for that. That's why we're so giving and kind. Most people who have addiction stuff are very, like, in a spiritual way, very, like, sensitive people. And so I said, I realize you have something to conquer, and I just want to thank you for not taking the whole family down with you. That has to be a brave thing. It's easy to steal from people who love you. It's an easy thing to do. And
yeah.
So, you know, I had, you know, and he's old. He was about 5 years older than me, and I really had a talk with him about that. But,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
That's a tough
thing.
My heart breaks for her daughter.
Yeah, for Bobby Christina.
And you can imagine.
Yeah.
She's dealing with all of it. Like all the stuff, you know. That's her mom.
Yeah, that's her mom.
She's sharing all this craziness on radio and television about her mother and
mm-hmm.
going through the grief. That's hard.
Mm-hmm. And they were so close. You know, they were really, yeah, they were so close. So she was the first person I thought of. When I heard that Whitney was, I was like, oh my gosh, Bobby Christina. And then I immediately thought about the fact that she was now, she's 17 or 18, she's 18 years old. So I said, well, you know what, thank God she hit 18.
Yeah.
You know, so it's going to be very tough for her, of course. But at least she was able to have her mom with her when she went through puberty and, you know, and now she's got, yeah. And CeCe Winans, from what I understand, is her godmother. And CeCe is ready to just step in and do everything she could possibly do. So this is a blessed, yeah, a blessed young lady.
Sometimes the kids are really resilient. Do you think about Michael Jackson's kids?
Oh, yeah.
They seem somewhat normal now. At least they're not walking around with masks and stuff.
Right.
You know what I mean? When their dad died, they were, you know, very young.
Uh-huh.
But they were embraced by the family. But it seems now they're doing things that normal, you know, kids would do and stuff like that. So thank goodness you know, after their dad passed, I don't know what situation was with, you know, the mothers and all that kind of stuff, but they seem to have bounced back, you know, for the most part. When you see them out now, when they interview them, they're you know, talking normal and stuff. And I think the grandmother has a lot of grandmother's love. She's keeping them, you know, underneath her a lot. And
yeah.
Hopefully,
yeah.
Houston, you know, will be able to do that, to really bring her close. And the women,
yeah.
Women of the
yeah.
family, you know, like really sit and nurture her and be there for her.
Yeah.
They drop the ball on her.
Absolutely,
not for a minute. Not, you know,
right.
not for a minute.
She really
okay.
Yeah.
To,
yeah.
Because
she was hospitalized a couple times,
well,
right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
yeah.
And then they, and wasn't
not
it just like
minute.
A week or two
yeah.
ago they said that she was snorting cocaine somewhere or something like that? I
still read all these stories. Yeah.
yeah.
Pictures on the internet yeah. and all types of stuff. It's crazy, but I just they can't drop the ball on her.
Though. Yeah.
They
yeah.
not take a look at her, but they also need to really, you know, sometimes take it a bit of
mm-hmm.
and we don't take care of the middle.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's okay because she's going to be angry. Her mother
yeah.
died. Her mother did this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? She's got a lot of emotions and stuff that she's running through. So hopefully then she's not looking at the physical part of it, but really looking to say, this girl needs to really talk it out.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, really
somebody,
talk
yeah.
it out. Really
somebody somebody
watch
that she can
maybe we need to have an intervention before,
yeah.
a preventative intervention,
yeah.
you know,
mm-hmm.
before, like that, and really look at the people that her mother surrounded herself with. To say maybe these are not the same people you need to surround yourself with. Let's go in another direction.
Yeah.
Like that. Because you can have money, fame, and all this stuff going on. And like you listen to Oprah all the time, and she will say, you know, she chooses who she surrounds herself with. So she doesn't have anybody around her who's doing drugs and different
yeah,
things, you know, whatever. Because you're more apt to start doing the things that they do. You know what I mean? If you sit, you're a light drinker, but if you sit around other people who drink a little
yeah,
bit more, you'll have a second glass of
yeah.
wine, a third glass of wine.
Before you know it.
You're more apt to, you know, do it a little bit
right,
more
right.
like that. Sometimes, so you know, I cut myself off from some people, even though they may be sort of positive or whatever. But if you're doing something you don't want to do, you've got to get away. It's an addiction. Like we talked about, you know, talking about weight. So my mother was going to walk through the door. I said, "You're an addict because you're a butcher.
Yeah.
You've got the cake ready for me when I come through. You love me, but you got to realize that yeah, you're enabling me to get to it because you made it and you brought it to me."
Yeah.
So how can you
yeah.
now say, you know, no? And I'm like, wow. So you really have to sort of think about, you
yeah.
know, that. You really just have to really embrace that young girl, you know, and really help her through what she needs to go through. And don't count her father out, because that's her living parent.
Mm-hmm.
That's still her living parent, her father. You know what I mean? And although they may have had a bad relationship and stuff like that, that's Daddy's
mom,
little girl.
That's right.
Regardless of what other people believe. You know,
there's her name. There's
they will
her name.
Let them develop
yeah, right.
their own relationship and see whether it's going to be a positive one, you know, for her. But
and
her mom is gone. Now that's where she came from, her dad.
Say that again.
You know, that's where she came from now, her dad.
Yeah.
Her mom is gone.
That's right.
You know, that people just don't block it off and say, your father's bad, because we see that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? People will say, oh, no, he's bad.
And this is the whole world saying that
absolutely.
About him.
Absolutely.
You know, maybe not everybody, but just
right.
about everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody that's talking.
Right.
I don't hear anybody saying, oh,
Bobby
you know, Bobby Brown's
right.
great. He'll be a great father
yeah.
for her.
No.
Even though he has moved on,
yeah.
even though, you know, they did some... what was that?
He's performing. He's working.
Yes, he is working.
Together.
And he has been. He was on Saturday Night Live, and
right
he was on
now,
a few other right on tour with New Edition, which
right.
is really
right.
you know that's a big stretch because
yes.
you know they had that falling out.
And only she's going to be able to give her some of the answers that she may seek about her mother. They were together for 15 years.
20.
Oh,
it?
Like something like
20.
I think they were married, so they
well,
been
she's 18.
Together, yes.
She's 18,
yeah,
so they've
right.
been together longer
yeah.
than that.
So he's the only person who can answer some of those really, really questions about the mother. Nobody else was there when the door is closed. And so if she seeks those answers and she's going to want to know more about her mother, that's the only person
for her
to be able to give her those answers,
yeah.
mm-hmm. whether it's the good, the bad, the ugly. You know, and they say, you know, when you forgive, you move on. And that's going to be a way that she's going to move on from a lot of things. So hopefully people will see the importance of that. You know, because she wants to know, was my mother this way? You know, did you really love each other? Her dad's going to give her those questions, those answers. Other people want to give her some crazy answers to it. Because
and
did you did that, you know, hit her, did this, did that, all that type of stuff. It's not going to help her to heal. But hopefully they'll say that, you know, this is a relationship that maybe you need to let her ease into.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And sympathize, you know, see how it goes. But never to just cut that relationship off.
Yeah, yeah. And I know he has new children. children now. He's remarried,
yeah,
right? Did he remarry?
Yeah.
Babies.
Yeah.
He has some babies.
Yeah.
He has a bunch of kids.
So
yeah. And he's remarried and he's trying to change. I saw a lot of the interviews with him, you know, him trying to change his life and stuff.
Right.
So.
Right.
Well, anyway, so Whitney, we love you. We'll always love you, as that song says. We will always love you. And go ahead, Cassandra, give us a little note so we can.
I do not have notes.
No.
Yeah,
no singers in the house? No singers in the house? No.
We'll always love you.
About Whitney, about the service though, I did forget one thing.
Sure.
You know, I thought Alicia Keys, you know, kind of, even in her talking about before she played and Stevie Wonder, when they talked about Whitney, there was something about Whitney that I think everybody kind of missed. And one was Alicia Keys said that she called her quite often, and she would call her Mima, and they would just go back and forth. And it was kind of like very personal to say that when people kept saying Whitney didn't have a support system, Whitney was technically mentoring folks, because Alicia said, you know, she called Jordan Sparks, she called all of these other people and just say, well, you know what, if you find it hard, just look towards God and all this other stuff, that Whitney was technically ministering to young women and had her own issues off on the side. But I just want to say that when people say the people didn't wrap their arms around her, I think that is totally false. I think that when people have addictions, there is nothing, like, technically that you can do without holding them down and locking them in the room. Like, I'm not sure about that, but I'm just saying. So when Alicia Keys talked about that and Stevie Wonder talked about her, and you get all of these different senses of who she was to other people, I think a very good measurement of who you are as a person is how people who love you speak about you, not the people who don't love you. I think there's two totally different perspectives, and you always want to be loved by the people who love you.
Well, amen.
That's just me.
Amen, amen. And that's it, yeah, and I'm just saying. And that's how we started out, too, because, you know, when I started out, that's exactly what I was talking about and what everybody was in agreement with, that, you know, while we're here to really let people who we love know how much we love them and reaching out and doing everything that we can while we're here as opposed to waiting until later and hoping that people know, you know, what you feel about them or what you could have done to help them or whatever, you know, just kind of doing those things now because, you know, as they say, no one knows the day or the hour. Yeah. So let's jump on in, transitioning from one more round of applause for Miss Whitney Houston. Yeah. Yeah. We love you.
I like to let that applause play out for her now. So now we're going to jump into hair. We are here again. We are here, ladies and gentlemen. We're here at D&K Hair Gallery, broadcasting live with NetStruck Networks, and we are talking to everybody. And the lady of the evening is Miss Kim, and she's going to be talking to us about our hair. And one of the things, I think we should just like open it up and have everybody talking about it. And I am going to just go right on in and say, listen, since I took my locks out and before I put my locks in, my hair has been, well, not even not so much before, because I was, my sister and I lived in Los Angeles, and she always took care of my hair for me when we were living in the same area. But then I moved to Ohio, and from Ohio I moved back to New York, and Ronnie was still on the West Coast. And it was, I was locked for 10 years. But what got me to wearing locks was not even so much that, you know, I just thought that was the greatest thing, or it was a political decision. It wasn't a political decision. It wasn't a I just want to be all natural decision. It was just like, okay, you know what? I don't know what else to do. I just don't know what else to do. I can't take this anymore. My hair will do well with perms for a season, and then winter will come up, and it'll just start falling out. You know, whether it was stress related or whatever, and right in one spot, it would just start breaking. And I, Kim, don't say nothing. I can have the potential to let my hair go too for a while. So, and as a black woman, I just feel like we don't have the luxury of ever letting our hair just go. It just is not, that is not something that we can do. And so my locks were great for a while, but boy, that was an expensive, because I was here, she's laughing. That was an expensive 10 years, but I loved it. And then after a while, I guess maybe whether it got too heavy or whatever, I took it out. And since then, it has been, I'm not going to say tormenting. Is there a softer word?
Wow.
It's been a very difficult thing. Like, what do I do now? I don't know. I tried perming for a while, and it always, you know, ends up looking good for the while, but it's just like I'm not happy with being comfortable. I want to be able to go to the gym. I want to be able to sweat the hair out. I want to be able to, and then when I leave the gym, I want to look sharp coming out of it. You know, but I was sweating. The only thing you can do is when you leave the gym, go straight to the salon, right? Because I'm not that one. I'm not that lady that can do my hair myself. I'm not her.
Yes.
You know?
And you're not alone. There are a lot of women like you out there that get into this mode that they don't know what to do with their hair. But the first step I would tell you to take is to love.
And this is Miss Kim, everybody.
Love your hair. Know your hair. Feel your hair. Touch your hair. Spend time with your hair. That's me.
Just hold my wig back. Hold on.
even if it's a wig, spend time with your hair. Caress it. Yes. Love it. Take it from there.
That's really good. But wait, okay. So, I don't really like to, like, come all out with my stuff. So,
But, you know, it's the color issue, you know, the hair color issue.
The natural color?
Yeah.
Is it an issue?
It is an issue. It wasn't before it started changing color.
That was white gold. White gold. If the white gold starts happening.
Yeah,
the gray hair. You
can
love
gray
hair.
Did you say gray? Because I didn't say gray.
Yes, that's right.
Yes, you can say.
I love my gray. However. However, I started.
Wait, hold on. What did you say, Chanel?
I'm not ready.
Okay.
I started. started turning gray when I was 18, so it's been a long time coming. And my hair just really fully turned gray recently, but that's why I think I'm comfortable with it, because I've had it for a long time.
It's gorgeous. Beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah. And I love it. I would never want to dye it.
It's gorgeous.
Thank you.
Gorgeous. That too. Thank you.
And as much as it's gorgeous on you, somehow. I mean, I love it on you, but I just don't want it so bad.
I just don't. I'm not ready. Like Chanel, I'm not ready. I'm not regretting it or upset about that. You know, I'm very happy with my age.
And,
right. But I just don't want to wear it that going.
So I have a question. What is it about your drinking that you don't like?
It makes me feel old.
Let everybody associate gray hair with being old.
What else do they associate it with?
Being wise.
Okay.
You're
that's true.
Obama, right?
That's
wise.
Right.
Yeah.
Very wise.
Right.
Distinguished.
Right.
Distinguished. Yes. But can't you be wise and distinguished with like black hair?
It's all color.
Got it. Baby. And then the other thing too that I find with and we weren't here to talk about just gray hair, but one the other thing about gray hair that you were telling me about was that it's more resistant and it's more dry and
because the layer of hair that contains your color has your moisture, your natural moisture, and your natural oil. So when that color is removed, all of that's gone, so the hair is left dry.
So why does it turn gray?
Because you're old.
We have been calling you. Where'd you go, Ronnie? We were calling you and calling you and calling you. Where were you?
Oh.
And you are so crazy. Where were you at? We were calling you when we were talking about Whitney, and you didn't answer, so we were...
Oh, I know. I'm sorry. A friend of mine called me from Los Angeles to cry about Whitney.
So I had to
console her.
Okay.
Yeah.
No
and so
problem.
I consoled her for a minute,
back.
Then I came back. But that's the bottom line. We get older, and the older we get, we lose the melanin in our hair.
Oh, right. Cassandra was saying that she started turning gray at 18, though.
Maybe it's possibly genetic. Possibly that's genetic, you know, that she started, premature gray. But for the most part, as we age, you know, we lose the property to make color. And so that's why we've been blessed with so many different products to make our hair. You know, we can recolor our hair. And you can also just embrace your color, and you can also reduce the gray. You don't have to just completely cover it. You can reduce it so it blends in, and you make it turn that gray and use it as a highlighter.
Right. So, Cassandra, what were you going to say? Unfortunately, Ronnie, you can't see my gray silver locks. But I have embraced my gray, and I've been gray since I was about 17, 18. But my mother, who lived to be 100, didn't have as much gray hair as I do. So it's not something that has to happen as you get older. And also, as you said, you can color it if you are uncomfortable with it.
It's a summer gray that was
not
going
with it.
It's
a summer gray that was not going with it. Chanel?
I know, but sheesh.
Don't fight it.
Embrace it. So, Ms. Kim, you have some products and some treatments and so forth that you do for folks with breakage, because that was one of the other things that a lot of the, you know, women talk about, is that their hair breaks a lot, especially with products.
I'm not going to say specifically which product, because I don't really endorse one product. Everybody here is different, so you have to try different things. However, the cause of the breakage is more important.
Even if you have a relaxed head of hair, there are different cause of breakage. So when you nail that down, when you find out what is the cause of the breakage, then you take it from and do the like what? Because of breakage. The way they comb your hair is create traction. Whatever you put on your hair attracts dust and dirt, and that could cause breakage. The environment you're in, stress could cause breakage.
Mm-hmm.
So if you narrow down to one of those, you use the appropriate treatment for her.
And I think that's
medication
like,
also.
Oh, yeah.
I know a lot of people take, you know, well, in our community, high blood pressure and stuff like that, a lot of that stuff really does.
It
gets to break your hair.
It affects the relaxed set of your more than natural mm-hmm. hair when you're...
Okay. All right. So stress, medication.
I was just saying it's
environment.
Environment. Your body.
Environment. Chemical.
Yes. The climate, weather.
Oh, the, like winter?
Yes. You change it from winter, summer to winter.
That's
my
summer, your menopause, that affects your hair, you know, as well, because now you're sweating all the time, you know, one minute you're all sweaty, and, you know, you go back and forth, so that's another thing to look forward to.
So,
you're not healthy enough.
Oh, diet. So, wow, that's so much to talk about. So, menopause, stress, weather, environment,
diet,
medication,
wearing a wool hat.
All right.
The
way you comb your hair, like what?
What you comb it? Oh, doing too much of a ponytail.
And what were you saying, Cassandra? Oh.
You see a lot of people too put the extensions in, and like I used to go to Harlem with my hair done whenever I put the extensions in. And I mean, people go out there and their eyes were in the back of their head by the time they finish.
That's right.
So you see the people who are missing all the hair, like all up in the front and all around the back. Had the little bumps like the little kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
that's over dropping out of feature.
Yeah. And that's something that I see a lot. And I used to get that too when I used to go to some of the braiding salons. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Some of the braiding salons from people that. Yeah.
They're just great. You know, they braid the braids so that they get every little, you know, nook and cranny in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then you find a braid on the floor.
Yeah.
Okay. I got a story about that. I had gone to one of the braiding salons and got my hair braided, like a full, you know, whatever the individual braids or whatever. And I was working at NYU Medical Center at the time. I'm on the nursing floor.
Okay, I'm going to put.
Yeah. So I was, you know, going from. patient room to patient room, doing the medications and so forth, and, you know, none the wiser, all of a sudden, and I'm, you know, there's very few, this was in the 80s, very few black nurses there anyway, right? So I've got this full head of hair, swinging it, just like, you know, swinging my hair all over the place. And I'm down at the nurse's station, and I see this guy, this very tall white guy. He was one of the nurses on the floor, and he's running after me.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, oh, my, and he's got this long braid in his hand. And he couldn't say it quietly, right? No. He had to scream it all the way down the hallway. So all the patients, all the other nurses, everybody's looking at my braid that fell out on the floor. And what am I going to say? No.
It's not.
What's that song? It wasn't me.
It wasn't me.
Oh, my goodness. It's got to be somebody else's. I don't know. But how many times that has happened?
Be careful. You have to be careful.
Great. Ronnie, were you talking?
No.
Oh, okay.
I was listening. But, you know, okay, so that really was abusive. What he did was abusive. No, that was abusive. He wanted to embarrass you, but you should have just said, good, I was looking for that.
Throw it right back in. Oh, my goodness.
Exactly.
Right there on the floor. But anyway, so that was one of the things, situations that I've had. But one of the other things, well, you know, Kim, being here, what are some of the most popular issues women have when they come in to you? What are they, like, looking to do, or do they know what they're looking to do? Because this is a huge issue for Black women, our hair. It's like, okay, the amount of money we spend on our hair, you know, our relationships a lot of times are dictated by our hair, or our hair is dictated by our relationship. Okay, don't let me get started on that. We'll be here till next week. How many times I've changed my hair as a result of who I happen to have been dating at the time.
Like in corporate America now. It has changed. It has definitely changed how we can wear our hair when we go to meetings. I always have a pleasure going to really big awards, you know, functions and stuff. And I'm so delighted when I go in now and I see Black women and they've got their natural hair.
Yeah.
It's more accessible, where you would go back maybe about 6-7 years ago. You would walk in and everybody had to be permed or a wig down, or, you know, you had a ponytail. If you had micro braids, it was back in a neat bun or something like that. You know, we didn't have all the colors and stuff to go to because it wasn't acceptable. You couldn't get a job.
Right.
You couldn't go on a job interview, you know, looking that way at a certain point. So if you don't do that, and even with men now, you see them with the dreads out, them out, and they go in their group.
And
their
stuff in their room.
Our ball players, you know, our actors and actors. But corporate America has changed, too. So a lot of that now gives women more freedom to say, you know what, I'm in the corporate world every day, but now I have freedom to wear my hair how I want to. You know, I don't have to go with what it was, you know, before. So I'm sure when they walk through Kim's door, I know I walk in, I'm like, Kim, I just need to eat. I need to be able to run, sweat, do this and that, make it versatile from the morning, you know, to the afternoon.
And people can't see you, so tell everybody how you have your hair.
Well, actually, now I have sister locks in my hair, and I've always been the one in the family who has just that nappy. You know, as Kim calls it, what do you call it, coily, or coarse, coily? She calls it coily hair. Yes, like little spring, you know, in my family. So I've always had this big, you know, bushy thing of hair. So it has to be combed out.
You do too?
I have that same hair. Heaven forbid it was dried and you didn't comb through it, or, you know, many times in between my mother or grandmother's leg was sweat out the back or the front of it and veins and stuff, and so, you know, and perms, really did.
With the pressing comb, you can take up
Afro kid. You know, so, yeah, so, like,
clear your hair. There are things that you could do out there to just keep it manageable. You just have to know your hair and know the products out there, which is going to work for your hair type.
Okay,
don't come and say, well, my sister's using this, and I think this is going to work on my hair, or I know that this is going to work on my hair. It doesn't often happen like that. Everybody here is different.
Uh-huh.
So you got to get the color that's going to work in your hair. And the concern that most women have is what to do with their hair and what to put on their hair. So I often tell them it's a trial and error sometimes. Sometimes you try one time and that works. Continue to use whatever works on you.
Right.
And stick to more natural things.
And so for the more natural things too, where do you find those?
Health food store is the more appropriate place to go.
Uh-huh.
Some other beauty supplies may have a few, but not much. But that's the
So you gotta read the
read your labels. Read your labels.
Yeah, like meeting skin.
I discovered there's natural hair color.
And then
so they got it.
Chemistry.
hair gets back up to the state of what I need for the strength.
because I'm one of those people, I have no clue what to do with my hair.
Oh.
Not a clue. I will sit there and I will put a ponytail in my hair for months. I'll keep doing it over and over because it's easy. It's the easiest thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then with my time schedule, you know, with the kids.
It's a very busy person.
The kids, the businesses, the regular job, and just the family, and just life, just period. It's just like I don't have the time.
Yeah.
So I don't even wash my hair. I'll come to camp. Yeah. That's and it's a pampering thing also. It's a pampering thing. I will be ex-Kim. I'm knocked out in the chair. Whatever chair she puts me in, I'm asleep because it's a pampering thing. But my hair has just went through a complete turnaround, and she's brilliant. And she knows my hair. And I have to admit, I've been coming to Kim since the beginning of last year, and she knew my hair off the bat. She knew my hair, that I have really coarse hair. She already told me, I know when you were little, when your mother was doing your hair, you used to sit there in tears. So she already knew the texture of my hair just by doing it for a few months. And so she, you know, the process and what we're going through and everything like that, she wants me to be 100% out of perm. And that's what we're
working on. Working very hard on that.
Working very hard. I am a little stubborn.
And why is that? Why is a little stubborn?
Why is that?
I've been doing perm for so long because my hair has been thick so long.
The only time I've been without getting my hair perm was when I was pregnant.
Okay.
Those were the only times that I did not, and then when I was nursing. So I was not perming
my
hair.
I think I can see you in a nice, short, natural. Oh,
you can keep it like this.
Yeah. Well, she does my mom's hair also, and my mom's hair looks gorgeous. Now, let me tell you the hint. Oh, my God, my mother has, like, horror stories with her hair. She will get her hair done Thursday evening. Friday morning, her hair looks like she never got it done. My mother got her hair done 2 weeks ago.
Natural pressed or?
Yeah, she has to get pressed. She has to get pressed.
And she has gray hair.
And she has gray hair.
Okay,
so
right.
She got her hair done 2 weeks ago from Kim. Kim is doing a treatment. And my mother, she told my mother how to wrap her hair or curl it or whatever. My mother went out last week, this Friday that just passed. It looked like she just came from the hair salon.
Wow.
She does. My mother follows very good direction. But my mother's hair, I'm telling you, look at you and you'll be like, did you just go to the hairdresser?
Mm-hmm.
I kid you not. When she went out and she had her hair done, it was beautiful. And she's like, you cannot, in 2 weeks, you see my mother's hair, you'll be like, oh, God, you know what? You need to throw a wig on something. She does not need to have a wig on. Her hair looks good. You can still see the press.
Oh, the press.
And she has to come back this week.
And it was so always listen to your stylist. Always listen to them.
Absolutely.
You could ask them any questions about your hair.
Yes.
If you have hair
stylist. If you have a good stylist. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
You want your stylist.
You're studying trichology.
Yes.
What is it?
What's it called?
Trichology.
Trichology, the scientific study of the hair.
So she analyzes your hair
mm-hmm.
when she first starts.
Right. That's how she knew
right.
the texture of my hair and everything.
And I've heard people come into the shop while I've been here and Kim is doing my hair, and they'll ask for something, and she'll say, no, that's not going to work for you. Which most places you'll go to, whatever you ask for,
they will do.
They
mm-hmm.
will do.
Uh-huh.
But that's
like
they don't want to say.
I'm not saying I'm just your hair gallery. We care about your hair.
Mm-hmm.
You don't care about your mother. Your money will follow.
Right.
But we care more about your hair.
Yeah. Because Kim does my mother. She does me. My niece. My nephew. My sister-in-law.
Wow.
My son.
They wear
clients.
Wow.
Okay.
They wear
clients. And my friends.
Yeah.
All different.
The son.
My son, what does he have? Texturizer. In his hair, like that. She does everybody's hair. My mother, too. Mm-hmm. 2 weeks later, I'm like, so I got to Kim this morning. I'm like, you just went. Your hair looks good. She says, no, it's been 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And she comes back. She comes back to Kim. And I know when she's here, Kim is taking care of her. Like that. So that's a whole other thing, you know.
Yeah.
Like that. So it's like a family place, you know.
So what about, I want to talk about relationships and hair. Has anybody had that? You won't laugh.
Well, I'm the only one.
Have impact, like, you know, for example, you know, well, nobody has on a wig but me, but, you know, it, have you had men say, I hate a weave,
I
hate a...
I have a wig before, in between taking out the braids. I call it Conchetta.
Oh,
my God.
Oh, your wig had a name.
Yeah.
My POC has my wig as a first name.
Each one had a name, and it was always like, you know, you involve relationships and stuff like that. First of all, you like the person know whether you have a wig on or not. Men don't know. You know, was it a weave? Is it a wig?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, whatever. You're like, what are you going to do? Can't get off the door.
I always think of that movie. What was that movie?
The fact that you have to have your hair done underneath your wig doesn't mean you're going to be sitting there with a wig cap and your answer. One of the things you're going to. So I always have, you know, my two-neck braids down and done because, you know, and you know, whatever, you don't know what's going to happen. You know, you like rub the hand to a couple of your fingers off and you're going to, you know, have an emotion and ruin the minute. Or you're going to say, okay, baby, or you're going to put it over here and then, you know, after all else is said, you're going to take with my wig.
There's money on that.
Talk to your stylist.
to help you. Wow.
And you know, when you naturally attract a whole different class of people, you do attract a certain type of people. People come up to you like, yeah, it's amazing. When your hair is perm, whole different type of people. When your hair is natural, you get more respect, I think.
Yeah.
They're shaking hands over here. They're shaking hands. They're slapping high fives.
It's so interesting. Like, they'll call you sister, and they'll be more like, you know,
color. I was getting color,
I was getting, I was getting color. I was getting oil treatment. I was getting deep condition. And then I was getting a style. So when you added all that up, I was dropping three bills. And so I was going, you know, but I was going about every 3 weeks, not once a month, but like every three weeks. Is that a long time or that's a lot? That's too quick. I didn't get color every 3 weeks, but I would go just about every three.
Not for color.
I can't remember how often she did color. Color might have been every 8 weeks or something.
With your hair grows on an African back for months.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you going every 3 weeks?
Get it washed. Yeah, to get it washed and to keep it clean and to keep it looking nice and styled and stuff. Because the thing is, I never wanted it to be Rastafari locks. I wanted to be. I had locks. Right. So I would go when it started to grow out and stuff. I would say every 3 weeks. Every once in a while I would stretch it. You know, I could, but pretty much I kept it looking neat and I wanted to go, so I went every 3 weeks. So it was expensive. So then my point is, though, when things changed, I didn't go as often. Right. I didn't go as often. Then I stretched out. Then I started doing it myself sometimes in between. And then my loctician left, and it was another adjustment to, like, trying to find somebody new. And then I was going to her house. And then, you know, and it just, like, wasn't the same. So I was trying to do it more often myself. And I was coloring it myself and all that kind of stuff. And then then I started looking like I was living up in the bush and eating coconut wat and things like that. So, little Rasta.
If you wanted to push on, you should still have her there to guide you along.
You guys have had that relationship. I don't know what we had, but it wasn't a bad relationship, but I just didn't need to be doing my hair myself, you know, because my locks were like down to here. So trying to color it and wash all that color out and making sure that it's properly treated and then deep condition it yourself and trying to get it dry and then try to, it was too much. It was just too much. And then it did start to break and it wasn't looking so good. So I took it out. But when I took it out, though, I had a lot of counsel because Ronnie was counseling me, and Ronnie would counsel me through it. So she was counseling me on how to, you know, get it out. It's starting to break. You know, don't let it continue because it's starting to spread now. So I got it out, and then I, you know, start transitioning and doing other things with it. But I never really caught up with myself to where I said, okay, I'm happy now with what I have. So right now I'm growing the perm out. You know, right now I'm in a position where I'm growing the perm out and braiding it down. Kim braided it down for me the last time. Ronnie had braided it down for me before. And then just keeping that up and keeping it moisturized, as you mentioned, how important that is. Because I wasn't doing anything. I just braided and then, like, okay, let's braid it.
If you could remember when Jerry Curl just came out and everybody had the Jerry Curl and they put the moisture in it and how that hair used to grow.
Like crazy.
Right.
I had the Jerry Curl. I had a long Jerry Curl. But when I sat down,
I used to leave my mark.
Some people still get Jerry Curl.
Still get Jerry Curl, but it's changed now. We have the Jerry Curl, we have the Dry Curl. And Jerry Curl was named after the person that invented it.
Jerry.
Yes. They are actually named the later on. We have Care Free Curl now, which is a very good curl. You don't have to put so much aftercare in the hair, so you won't leave that mark.
What movie was that? That was Coming to America, right? Oh, yeah, and that other crew, the other one where they stole the guy's activator, remember? And his hair reverted back. But anyway, so the curls are still
Still there, and the dry curl is very helpful.
The dry one. The dry one.
Yeah.
The way it
goes.
Okay.
Okay. Nice. So give us more, you know, start to wrap up. Oh, yeah, we're going on to 9 o'clock.
Ronnie, you still there?
I'm here.
Oh, okay.
Because she's been very quiet.
Yeah, I'm listening. I'm listening to all the different scenarios, listening to what everybody's going through with their hair care, you know, not only the issues but the good, like, I love the story about her mother and how beautiful her hair is looking now. That was great to hear that somebody, you know, is finally relieved of having bad hair. Bad hair, there's nothing worse, I think, than bad hair. And I believe that we as African-American women do have the most challenging hair. But on the other hand, we have the most magnificent hair because we can transform our hair into anything.
That's right.
We can do 1 week, we can have short hair. The next week, we can have long hair. Another day, we can have locks. Another one, we can have a natural. You know, we can have blonde hair. We can have black hair. We can be any woman we want to be. So, you know, if you embrace that aspect of our hair and able to get a handle on the hair care. And I think the hair care comes from education. It really does. Like Kim said, if you're educated, you are able to help or able to get a better handle on keeping your hair in good condition. And another thing, too, we like to, because we have the hair that we have, we do a lot of crazy things to our hair, because I know I have. You know, I love doing something. Oh, great, my hair grew out really perfectly. Now I want to color it blonde and then get a perm and then straighten it.
All the same day.
And shave it off on the side.
Oh, yeah, they're talking about
self-control.
Yeah. What'd you say, Ronnie?
We need self-control.
Yeah.
Like she said, to stick with your stylist and keep your hair healthy.
Yeah.
Little girls are older now. They have
absolutely.
Okay.
The hair's all broken off. They got the hair follicles get messed up. And that's why I advise my clients, after a period of time, 5 years or so, stop the relaxer for 1 year, a year and a half. Just give your hair a break. Give your staff a break. Do a lot of moisturizing and oil treatment at that time.
Because you remember Chris Rock when he did
the movie.
Yeah.
Documentary.
When they talked about what the chemical tests he did.
Chemical has to be left on the hair for a long period of time for it to take that
stuff. Yeah. The crazy people will try permanent on hair, figure the longer they leave it in, the longer the perm will stay.
Yeah, because they want
straight.
And 100% straight translates to 100% breakage. You should never get your hair. It's called relaxer, not straightener. Never get your hair 100% straight.
Right. That's what they
think they make. Our hair wasn't designed for that.
Wow. I like that. Relaxer, not straightener. That's good.
Okay. Yeah.
Just
keep
it
in
my
relaxer.
We'll work for you.
We need some strength.
Yeah. So Ronnie, what you were that was a good point too that you mentioned about the fact that we can sometimes get into abusing it because we know we can do so many things. I know I've done that.
Yeah, and that's why you have to. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's why I was saying that one of the things that we have to do is exercise control so that we do maintain excellent hair condition. Self-control, because I know I've done it a lot of times and then regretted it afterwards just because I said, I want this right now. I want to look like that right now. And so with, like she said, you know, having your hair moisturized, I think, is one of the main factors in healthy hair, moisturizing and deep. I like to do a lot of deep penetrating conditioners, oil, hot oil treatments that help to maintain natural, glossy, healthy hair without a lot of chemicals. So that's been my latest achievement, helping the hair become glossy, shiny, and healthy looking with the least amount of chemicals as possible. But I believe in hair color with my whole heart.
Well,
in front
of the family.
I love it. I love hair color, and I believe in it. I think it's beautiful, and when used properly, it's really enhancing, and it helps you. It gives you an uplift, you know. And those that embrace gray, that's great. You know, I don't have anything against it, but personally, I don't like it. I don't like to wear it for myself. I do see women that have it and it's sparkly, especially if it's really sparkly and fresh.
Yep.
You know, you're taking all the yellow out. It's gorgeous. I do believe it is gorgeous. And you have nice, healthy skin. It's a beautiful combination. But for me, nah.
Yeah. When I chat with anyone. Yes, exactly.
Well, is that?
Just keep to stick to natural colors, all right?
What'd she say?
She said natural
color,
natural dye.
Stick to natural dye?
Natural colors, okay?
What does that mean?
Like the hair.
I don't think I can hear her. I'm not hearing her. Is she speaking to me?
Yeah. I'm just telling you.
What do you mean natural colors?
You could use the henna. The henna is more natural than the Miss Clara out there that you have to use the peroxide with.
Oh, I hear you. Yeah, no, I like hair color. I'm just right, you know. I can't help myself. I'm sorry. I use hair color.
She said, you heard them say color crack.
Yep, that's me. But you know, I'm making a joke though. I use mostly demi permanent colors. I try not to use a lot of permanent colors with peroxide. I use the demi, you know. So you just use an activator. It's still a type of peroxide, but it's not as strong. And so I use mostly demi and semi permanent colors. I try to do that.
Okay.
And that helps a lot. It really does. And they last a lot longer, and they penetrate gray really nice. So I do try that. But I don't use that Bijan because it has metallic salts in it. So I don't use that ever.
Yeah, that's what I – oh, and that's what I was using in my locks. And I found out later that the Bijan was the problem. That's what I was using on my locks. And that's what the stylist told me to use, too. So I think
a lot of people lose that, but they don't realize that once you use that, you have put metallic salts in your hair, and you can't use any other color because it's going to burn your hair out. But I try to use, I try my best to be as healthy as possible, but I do use commercial hair colorings. But I use demi-permanent, which is not permanent hair coloring. So it's less strong, but it still does get the job done.
Yeah, go ahead, Kim. Will you say?
Yeah, I was just saying that a lot of stylists think that that hair color is not a permanent color, but it is.
The Bijan.
Yes, because it doesn't wash out.
Oh, yeah, the Bijan. And they told me that it was natural, so
it
that's why they said using that.
It is
not. Yeah. Well, I found that out now, and I do believe that that had a lot to do with it as well, because, again, as I mentioned, it was difficult to wash it out of my lock myself. So I was using it, and I probably used it too often, you know, or whatever, who knows. But yes, exactly. And I was using a color as well. So it was like a brownish tint to it. My hair is a dark, dark brown, and I was lighting it. So I used more of it than.
A double process? You like
I don't know what that is. No, I didn't do that. I just used the Bijan, but I would use two bottles of it, yeah.
Okay.
So, you know,
like a 58?
I don't know. It was a long time ago. So I think that a lot of that had a lot to do with it. And then so when I took it out, then I just started all over again. And I wouldn't perm it for the longest, and then I let a stylist convince me to perm it. And that is when that was the beginning of the Thank you. And I didn't, because I didn't want to keep it permed up, but I had to keep it permed up once I started, you know. So when I took my locks out, my hair was to my shoulder. And by the time she finished perming it, and then she said, well, now you got to cut it. Well, now you got to cut it. So by the time she was done, my hair was down here, and now I was stuck with this, I don't know what else to do but go back to her. And I was going back. Now I was going to her every week, $100. And I was like, okay, come on. So now I'm spending more than I was spending when I was getting the perm, because at least it was $300 every 3 weeks. Now it's $100 every week, you know. Plus when she did the color and the this and the this, that was like $150, $170, $200.
All right. No hairdresser bashing over there.
Well, it looked nice. You know, it looked nice, but it was just more than I wanted to spend.
Was
that
enough?
Huh? Yeah, what's up?
You pay more for it.
I mean, it looked wonderful. It looked wonderful, but it just ended up being really costly, and so it was tough. So
I want to interject that hair dressing is costly.
Yes, it is.
That's and right. To keep your hair in good condition, it costs. And to keep your body in condition, it costs. And they keep your car in condition, it costs. When you go to the mechanic, he charges thousands of dollars to keep your car on the road. So it's just costly. And I work in a lot of really good salons, and the women that come in there, they have to spend the money to keep their hair, you know, to keep their appearance up, and they spend it, you know, especially on hair, people that get their hair colored regularly. It really does cost, and they just spend it, you know. I'm not trying to say that you have to overspend, meaning that you should be abused, you know, your hair, whatever process or whatever procedures or whatever it is done to your hair should last a period of time, and your hair shouldn't be damaged in the process. You know, sometimes that happens, but hopefully not. But it does have to cost, and so if we keep I mean, those products cost, and the work is, you know, the person is an expert in that field, and you have to pay them for their work. And so we should not hate to have to pay the hairdresser. And a lot of us do. We hate to pay the hairdresser.
Piper.
Yes, they want to look good.
Kim, can I get an amen on that?
Amen.
Just pay the haircut.
Amen. So
amen.
On that note, thank you so much, Ryan, because we're walking up on 9 o'clock. So I just want to shout out again to everybody listening. Thank you for calling in and tuning in tonight to Ask Kathleen. This was a great discussion.
Yes, it
was a great discussion. So we are broadcasting here live tonight from DNK Hair Gallery at 203.
That's my report. Be right next to the Burger King, across from the Subway restaurant. Come and look pretty. You can get some food to eat, too.
Yes. And we're here tonight with Network. Sharon, help me.
NetStruck Partners.
NetStruck Partners. And you can find NetStruck Partners.
You can find NetStruck Partners on Facebook. Mm-hmm. So you can just type in NetStruck LLC, and you'll pop up on that. The DNK Hair Gallery also is on Facebook, so those of you, please friend the page.
Yes.
And also, Palette Pleasures, we want to also give Palette Pleasures a shout out. The fabulous fruit trays and fruit designs.
Pina coladas and mango coladas and all the strawberry. What was the other one? The flavor?
Strawberry coladas.
Yeah. Phenomenal. And chocolate covered strawberry.
We'll be on an island.
Welcome to Esprinet News, 90-second news break. The Occupy Wall Street protest that started in mid-September with a few dozen demonstrators now has over 15,000 and has spread beyond America. The group has garnered support from some unions and congressional groups like the Congressional Black Caucus. The New Orleans iconic Louisiana Superdome will be renamed to the Mercedes-Benz Superdome after a decade-long search for a potential buyer. The New Orleans Saints football team announced their agreement with Mercedes-Benz, giving the German automaker the title to the 36-year-old stadium in a 10-year lease. The cost was not made public. A judge ruled that the Fire Department of New York has not committed enough time or resources to reverse a long history of discrimination. The judge wrote that the underrepresentation of black firefighters in the FDNY is a direct result of the city's discrimination. Mexico City is considering plans to introduce temporary marriage licenses to help newlyweds avoid the hassle of divorce. The minimum marriage contract would be for 2 years and can be renewed if the couple agrees. There you have it. I'm Jerome Esprit for Esprinet News.
love, once lost, now my lessons learned. Bye, baby.